transmission-based precaution foundations. When a highly transmissible or epidemiologically significant pathogen or infection is identified in an LTC facility, TBP must be added to the SP already in place. Transmission-based precautions, TBP, sometimes referred to as isolation precautions, are special precautions used to manage specific organisms in the LTC facility when SP are not enough to completely interrupt the route of transmission. For example, TBP may be put in place to halt the spread of antibiotic-resistant organisms or to help control an outbreak. These precautions incorporate additional control measures based on the pathogen's mode of transmission. Like SP, TBP are used in all healthcare settings. And they, too, have become standardized over time. The CDC's guideline for isolation precautions outlines multiple features and processes for additional IPC measures. The guidelines have been updated multiple times since they were first released and include precautions and guidelines for tackling emerging pathogens and bioterrorism agents. The guidelines also include specific information related to instituting TBP in LTC settings. The decision to initiate TBP, which precautions and when, will be dependent on the LTC facility's policies, which must be written in accordance with accepted national standards, CMSF 880. While the IP is the leader of an LTC facility's IPC team, there are a number of other individuals essential to the selection and implementation of TBP. In addition to the IP, TBP can be initiated by a resident's physician or by any member of the nursing team. In all such instances, the IP should be notified as soon as possible so they can begin surveillance and monitoring. Nursing staff also plays a key role in monitoring residents on TBP. TBP are a key component of any facility's protocols for preventing and controlling the transmission of infectious agents, including EMDROs, which are microorganisms that are resistant to one or more classes of antimicrobial agents. This makes controlling them and preventing their spread of the utmost importance in a population characterized by weak or compromised immune systems, a population that is also likely to have additional comorbidities. The IP must ensure that all staff members receive adequate training and education on the impact of EMDROs in healthcare in general and in LTC facilities in particular. In order to institute TBP correctly and consistently within an LTC facility, the IP must consider several factors. These factors are shown in Exhibit 5-6. Exhibit 5-6. Factors in the effective use of TBP. Some TBP may require the LTC facility to put personnel restrictions in place. These restrictions are based on the immunity of HCP to certain infections and diseases, immunity conveyed either through vaccination or recovery. For example, susceptible HCP should be restricted from entering the rooms of residents known or suspected to have measles, rubella, or chickenpox or disseminated zoster, varicella zoster virus. Immune HCP should be assigned to provide care for these residents whenever possible. Immunocompromised staff members should also be restricted from interacting with residents with these infections. Hierarchy of controls. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, part of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, has developed a hierarchy of controls, shown in Exhibit 5-7, to protect workers from hazards in the workplace. It may be easily adapted for use in other aspects of IPC programs, IPCPs, and strategies. Exhibit 5-7, Hierarchy of Controls. Source, adapted from the CDC's Hierarchy of Controls. Strategies at the top of the hierarchy are described as generally more effective and protective than those at the bottom. However, it is important to note that all levels within the hierarchy are critical for effective IPCPs in healthcare facilities and that multiple levels of control can be implemented concurrently as well as sequentially. The five levels of the hierarchy are: elimination of risk involves implementing strategies that remove or mitigate the risk of infection and transmission. This means possibly limiting the movement and containment of residents with a known or suspected colonization or infection. Example, limiting points of entry to wards or units where an outbreak is underway, as well as limiting visitation, outings, or group activities based on transmission rates. Substitution replaces existing practices with temporary, alternative, or even entirely new practices. Example, replacing reusable equipment and supplies with single-use alternatives or ensuring that cleaning and disinfecting products have appropriate kill claims for confirmed or suspected pathogens. Engineering controls are practices that focus on reducing exposure to the hazard at the source without depending on HCP behavior. Example, installing signage, point-of-care alcohol-based hand rub, ABHR dispensers, or Sharps disposal containers, or improving ventilation systems. Administrative controls are policies and procedures for assuring safe work practices. These can include changing existing or implementing additional practices, policies, and procedures. Example, providing HCP with appropriate information, training, and education, resident and staff immunization programs, Sharp safety programs, and point-of-care risk assessments. PPE includes specialized garments and other equipment that, when worn correctly, provide barriers that protect the wearer's clothing, skin, eyes, mucous membranes of the mouth and nose, and airways from contact with infectious agents. Example, gowns, gloves, face masks and shields, and goggles. PPE alone cannot control transmission, and it is effective only when used correctly. It should be noted that some healthcare settings may not have the option of the elimination or substitution levels. However, engineering and administrative controls, as well as PPE use, should be available in all healthcare settings and can be incorporated into any IPC program's planning and implementation strategies. Equipment and transmission-based precautions. When TBP are initiated, the IP must ensure that certain steps are taken so that staff members are properly prepared with the necessary supplies. Specifically, the four categories of supplies that must be attended to for all types of TBP are shown in Exhibit 5-8. Exhibit 5-8, Equipment and TBP, Transmission-Based Precautions Education. IPs are responsible for ensuring that all staff, residents, families, and visitors receive appropriate and up-to-date TBP education and training. According to the CDC's guideline for isolation precautions, education programs have been associated with sustained improvement in adherence to best practices. Staff education and training are essential to the successful implementation of TBP. The CDC recommends that anyone who has an opportunity for contact with patients or medical equipment be provided with relevant education early in their training and that they receive frequent additional education, for example, annually, to maintain their competency. Staff should also be instructed on any changes to policies or procedures. An understanding of the scientific and medical rationale behind the various precautions should help LTC facility staff to correctly implement TBP and to adapt them to changing conditions and resources. Staff should also receive unit-specific education that prepares them for the possibility of initiating TBP, including education on how to handle resident transfers. Because LTC facility residents can be frequently hospitalized, there is the increased possibility of transferring pathogens between healthcare settings. The policies and protocols for communicating information should also be made clear to staff so that other departments, facilities, and relevant stakeholders can be kept in the loop. When initiating TBP, the IP and other resident care staff should clearly explain to residents and their families what additional precautions needed, when they are needed, and why they are needed. The IP should bear in mind that TBP may limit the ability of residents to socialize, thereby placing a considerable psychological burden on them. CMS states that residents undergoing TBP can, and should, continue to receive visitors. Therefore, visitors should be educated on the risks of visiting while TBP are underway. This includes HH and the use and safe disposal of PPE. Note that policies on visitors' use of PPE may vary by facility. All information that visitors may need to know should not only be explained verbally, but also made available in print. Example, pamphlets. Categories of transmission-based precautions. TBP are separated into four main categories. Contact precautions. Droplet precautions. Airborne precautions. Enhanced barrier precautions. Precautions from these categories are not mutually exclusive. It is entirely possible that various TBP from different categories might be used in combination. For example, both contact and airborne precautions might be indicated for herpes zoster, shingles. Contact precautions. Contact precautions are TBP used to reduce the risk of contamination from and transmission of pathogenic microorganisms spread by direct or indirect contact with the resident or the resident's environment. Contact precautions are mostly used in healthcare settings to prevent the transmission of MRSA and C. difficile, as well as other EMD or OS. However, contact precautions may be used for other microorganisms as well, for example, Candida auris. Key point. Contact precautions are required even if HCP has no direct contact with the infected resident. The high levels of environmental microbial contamination and the persistence of microbes on high-touch surfaces support the rigorous use of contact precautions by all who enter the room of such a resident. In acute care, residents who require contact precautions should be placed in a private room. If a private room is not available, resident cohorting should be implemented after consultation with an IP. Staff must change their gown and gloves between residents, even if both residents share a room or one or both are on contact precautions. And proper HH should always be followed between glove changes. Gowns and gloves must then be removed when exiting the resident's room or other area of placement, such as an anteroom. When gown and gloves have been removed and discarded, HH must be performed. Gowns may not be worn outside areas designated for their use. For example, resident room, cubicle, treatment room, and are not reused. Lab coats, scrub attire, and personal garments, for example, sweaters or jackets, are not to be used in lieu of institutionally provided gowns for contact precautions. All equipment should be disinfected prior to it leaving the room of a resident under contact precautions. If this is not possible, any equipment used by a resident under contact precautions should be taken to a reprocessing or soiled utility area. It should be placed in a plastic biohazard bag or another appropriate container. For example, used needles or razors should be disposed of and transported in FDA-approved Sharps disposal containers. Contact precautions are typically discontinued when signs and symptoms of the infection have resolved or according to pathogen-specific recommendations. The CDC has published a contact precautions guideline table. It and other additional resources are available on the CDC's website. As an example, while performing an admissions assessment, a nurse identifies a major, uncontained draining wound in the resident's abdominal region. Following TBP policy, the nurse should immediately place the resident on contact precautions. Contact precautions guidelines are shown in Exhibit 5-9. Exhibit 5-9. Contact precautions guidelines. Droplet precautions. Droplet precautions are TBP that prevent the transmission of diseases caused by large respiratory droplets that are generated by coughing, sneezing, or talking. Diseases transmitted by the droplet route include but are not limited to influenza, pertussis, and bacterial meningitis due to Neisseria meningitidis. For resident placement, single rooms are preferred. However, residents with the same disease may share a room. The door to the room should be kept closed. Priority should be given to residents with excessive sputum production when single resident rooms are in short supply. Residents must be separated by at least 6 feet. Privacy curtains should be drawn between residents, and immunocompromised residents should not be placed with residents on droplet precautions. Ambulatory residents should be instructed on cough etiquette and respiratory hygiene and be given masks until they can be placed in an examination room. If a resident does need to leave their room once placed under droplet precautions, they must wear a mask. Discontinuation of droplet precautions occurs after signs and symptoms have resolved or according to pathogen-specific guidelines. Droplet precautions guidelines are shown in Exhibit 5-10. Exhibit 5-10. Droplet precautions guidelines. Airborne precautions. Airborne precautions are TBP used to prevent the transmission of infectious organisms that remain suspended in the air and travel great distances due to their small size, less than 5 micrometers. Consequently, the concern for transmission of these pathogens in healthcare settings is not typically from face-to-face contact, but rather from airflow patterns within the facility. These diseases include measles, smallpox, chickenpox, pulmonary tuberculosis, avian influenza, and possibly severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS-associated coronavirus. In addition to these organisms being transmitted into the environment by breathing, some procedures can aerosolize infectious tuberculosis skin lesions. For example, wound irrigation, whirlpool treatment. Endotracheal intubation is another example. For acute care settings, residents should be placed in an A2R with negative air pressure relative to the corridor. If an A2R is not available, for example, they are not typically available at LTC facilities, CDC guidelines state that a private room should be used with a portable high-efficiency particulate air, HEPA, filter if available. There should be at least 6 to 12 air exchanges per hour, and air should be directly exhausted to the outside. Monitor the air pressure daily with visual indicators, such as smoke tubes or flutter strips, and electronic methods, for example, maintenance air exchange reports, when possible. The door to the room should be kept shut. In ambulatory care settings, follow protocols to quickly identify and isolate the resident to minimize HCP exposures. Per the CDC, when administering to residents under airborne precautions, all HCP must wear a fit-tested, NIOSH-approved N95 or higher-level respirator when entering the infected resident's room. The respirator should be donned prior to room entry. Susceptible HCP should be restricted from entering rooms of residents known or suspected to have measles, rubella, chickenpox or disseminated zoster, varicella zoster virus, and smallpox if other immune HCP are available. Immunocompromised and pregnant HCP should also be restricted from these residents. Discontinue airborne precautions according to pathogen-specific recommendations in the guideline, being sure to check national and regional guidance. Airborne precautions guidelines are shown in Exhibit 5-11. Exhibit 5-11. Airborne precautions guidelines. Residents under airborne precautions should be restricted to their rooms. If a resident has an airborne infection, such as varicella, disseminated zoster, or rubella, they should be assigned HCP who either have documented immunity to these diseases or have been immunized against them. If a resident is infected with tuberculosis, all staff must use respiratory protection, N95 respirator or powered air purifying respirator, PAPR, when providing care. All HCP who are required to use a respirator must do so in the context of a comprehensive respiratory protection program, which includes medical evaluation, fit testing, and training in accordance with OSHA's Respiratory Protection Standard, 29 CFR 1910.134. Fit testing should be performed annually. N95 respirators are single-use devices that should not be saved to be reused at a later time. Enhance barrier precautions. Due to the risk of infection transmission during high contact situations, especially from EMD or OS, the CDC introduced a new approach to the use of PPE during resident care in 2019. Enhanced barrier precautions, EBP. EBP are used to prevent the transmission of EMD or OS in LTC settings and nursing homes. EBP recommend that gowns and gloves be worn by HCP during high-touch activities in a resident's room. They should also be applied to residents with any wounds, regardless of EMD or O colonization status. Indwelling medical devices, regardless of EMD or O colonization status. Infection or colonization with an EMD or O wound is generally considered to be any skin opening that requires a bandage or other dressing. Because EBP are intended for use with residents at high risk of acquiring an EMD or O, over a prolonged period of time, wound must also be understood to refer to any chronic wounds, which according to the CDC include pressure ulcers, diabetic foot ulcers, unhealed surgical wounds, and chronic venous status ulcers, among others. Given the increased risks of infection among LTC residents, EBP are particularly relevant for suspected or confirmed EMD or O infections in that setting. EBP should also be used when an LTC resident has open wounds or indwelling medical equipment, a catheter, for example. Examples of high contact situations, as identified by the CDC, for which EBP are indicated include bathing/showering, bathroom assistance, dressing/changing clothes, especially undergarments, device care, wound care, changing linens. Unlike contact precautions, EBP implementation does not restrict a resident to their room, nor would it bar them from participating in group activities, as long as any wounds are covered and it is safe for them to move about. Therefore, due to the requirement that LTC facilities must prioritize resident quality of life, EBP should be considered before contact precautions. EBP precautions are typically maintained as long as the condition that prompted their implementation remains, for example, for as long as the resident is fitted with an indwelling device, or until their wound is healed, or until they depart the facility. The effective application of EBP requires staff participation in initial and ongoing education and training in HH and PP use, gloves and gowns, donning and doffing. If a facility has rooms containing multiple residents who require EBP, then staff members must know that they should change their gowns and gloves and perform HH between providing care for each resident. Intensified precautions. Intensified precautions are used when both SP and TBP fail to halt the transmission of an infectious organism. These are also known as intensified interventions. Intensified precautions are instituted for a number of reasons, including evidence of a highly transmissible pathogen, norovirus or influenza. For example, circulating in the LTC facility or an EMDRO outbreak, when an unusual pathogen is identified by the laboratory, or when the incidence of a specific pathogen is increasing or fails to decrease after proper control measures have been implemented. Examples of intensified precautions that can be implemented to combat the aforementioned situations include cohorting infected and colonized residents, dedicating staff to care for isolated or cohorted residents, restricting new admissions or closing affected nursing units, increasing and enhancing environmental cleaning and disinfection procedures, performing active surveillance cultures. These interventions should be implemented based on careful evaluation of a specific situation and any associated risks. The IP should confer with their team on the most appropriate interventions so that the precautions chosen are those that provide the best chance for controlling and halting an infectious event or outbreak. Assigning specific HCP to a cohort of infected residents can further limit the spread of an infectious pathogen in an LTC facility. This practice is particularly recommended by the CDC in Guidance for Isolation Precautions when routine IPC measures have failed to stop transmission. While recommended, some LTC facilities may have difficulty implementing this particular intervention due to a shortage of staff or other available resources. Initiating transmission-based precautions. Deciding to when to initiate and when to remove TBP is crucial and involves many considerations and partners within the facility. When a highly transmissible pathogen or organism is identified, appropriate TBP must be implemented. The implementation of certain TBP will be different in LTC facilities than in some other healthcare settings. According to the CMS, LTC facilities should provide a home-like environment dedicated to person-centered care. This guidance refers not only to the physical but also to the social and psychological environment. Social relationships and interpersonal interactions with other residents, family, and visitors are essential components in the provision of quality care. Similarly, the CDC classifies LTC facilities as non-acute care settings. As such, LTC facilities must maintain environments that place as few restrictions as possible on their residents. This often poses a challenge for an IP initiating TBP. They must strike a delicate balance between providing a home-like living environment for residents and making the care environment as safe as possible. Thus, the decision to implement TBP must be considered carefully, with due consideration given to the affected resident's quality of life. Certain TBP can result in curtailed freedom of movement. It is essential that TBP are implemented in a way that does not unduly restrict the resident's quality of life. Only precautions that are indicated should be instituted. Key point: when deciding whether or not to implement TBP, IPs must consider the psychological well-being and care plan of all affected residents so that their needs may continue to be met with the least amount of interference. Residents should never be kept on TBP for longer than necessary. Careful consideration for each resident means that each case should be individually assessed for risk factors. For example, wounds, indwelling devices, ability to contain secretions, ability to follow instructions, behaviors, personal hygiene. Based on this assessment, the IP should implement the least restrictive precautions necessary for managing the infection or possible outbreak. Precautions requiring residents to be restricted to their room should only be used when there is clinical justification to do so. Finally, it is crucial that TBP be discontinued as soon as the risk of transmission has dissipated so that residents are not confined any longer than necessary and citation by CMS surveyors is avoided. Discontinuing transmission-based precautions. The decision to discontinue TBP is the responsibility of the IP and senior staff at the LTC facility, the resident's physician or the director of nursing, for example. Any decision to discontinue TBP should be in accordance with facility policy as well as any relevant regulations. Given the unique conditions at LTC facilities, the decision to discontinue is important and must be made with an eye to balancing the need to limit environmental restrictions on residents with the need to provide a safe environment for everyone living in and working at the facility. TBP are generally discontinued when clinical signs and symptoms are resolved or according to pathogen-specific recommendations. When a resident suspected or known to be infected with C. difficile no longer has diarrhea, for example, policies may vary by healthcare setting, and some state and local health departments may offer specific guidance for when isolation precautions should be discontinued, especially as they relate to residents with tuberculosis. It should be reiterated that TBP should be discontinued as soon as possible. Extending the application of these precautions, just in case, may be detrimental to residents' quality of life and must, therefore, be avoided. For guidance, see Appendix A, Type and Duration of Precautions Recommended for Selected Infections and Conditions, published by the CDC.